Just before we start this podcast, I just want to have a message from one of our sponsors. One of our main sponsors is Apeiron Clothing, where you can get premium golf wear at discounted prices. Check out our website at www.apeiron-clothing.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bogey Boys podcast.
This is episode 11. Finally, Fitzpatrick. Obviously, you're joined here by your hosts, Kevin and Mark, as always. What's been going
down?
Great start.
Almost as good as my start.
Do you know what was going on there? All my notes were loading. I was just rattled.
Start too quick today.
But it's all good. How's things?
It was almost as good as my start yesterday when I made
My daisy chain.
On Aaron and Oliver.
Yeah, so just in case anyone didn't see it, we went down and one of our mates, Josh, his little lad, Aaron, and his friend, Oliver, both eight, aren't they? Eight and nine? Or both eight? So young lads anyway, and they were doing a 36-hole challenge, nine holes, like sort of copying what we'd done with, well, Josh said he got the inspiration from 18 or four different courses.
Yeah.
Took nine holes of four different courses, and then we would join them for the last nine to spur them on.
He wants a little match with us, didn't he?
And they were trash talking and all that. And then so Mark gets on the tee, and like there was
first
about...
First off, by the way.
First off as well, yeah. There was a good
30 family and friends, people, yeah.
Family and friends and
come
kids running about.
Fellas, yeah.
You basically hit a flop shot, didn't you? With your three wood
flop shot, yeah.
Onto the road.
I don't even think it hit the road. It might be one of the par three course.
Yeah, it was horrendous.
It was a baddie, like.
I don't know if it, like, what it was, nerves or like you're blaming the gym, aren't you?
It was definitely the gym. Yeah. So back in the gym last week, 2 days in a run, and I just went nuts, chest, triceps, biceps, shoulders, back, you name it, I'd done it. Just throwing dumbbells around the place.
Yeah. So have I, though.
Felt in a lot of pain.
Yeah, you know what the problem is? It's recovery. It's like you can do it all, but you need to be like, getting your protein in and getting your recovery up. That's why you're aching. That's why you're hitting them big sky hooks or whatever it was, sky slices.
No, I just wasn't ready for golf, really. Up in Delamere.
Oh, wait there. Hang on a minute. I turned up on the driving range and you're like, I haven't missed a shot, calling out all flag colours on the range, all the little kids saying
that's
blue,
standard practice,
red, right? And you're flagging them down.
I was, though.
Yeah.
Either way, it wasn't a good nine holes for me.
No.
The kids took the win.
They did. Well,
you tried your best.
It doesn't tell the full story, does it? Like, it was, we were two up through four.
Yeah.
I held like a 30 or 25 foot birdie put on the fourth to the sound of jeers.
Yeah, boo.
Like, boo, because we went two up. And then the lads, they were playing from like 100 and odd yards, weren't they? But they were,
yeah,
it was par fours, but anyone with the water, it was par threes.
Yeah, what Chris was telling me now, there's like an international standard now based on your age. You play from this yardage to the hole.
And then
it goes back like 80, 100 yards for the next age group. But obviously you can progress early if you're finding that yardage too easy for you. So
well, yeah. Well, I think Oliver needs to progress after some of them, like Anna, and like they were the par fours, and like they're driving it onto the green.
Yeah.
Like, and then Eagle, so cuts. Oliver knocked onto the green, and then you lost the ball. I lost the ball. So I had like a 6 foot bogey putt, which didn't really matter. But Oliver makes it two.
Yeah.
So you're like, wow.
Up and down,
up and down off the tee. Yeah. And then the next hole, like, he hit it into like 15 foot or something.
Yeah.
I drained a monster from the back of the green.
That was a good 35 foot downhill, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, probably further. I reckon it was good.
Pretty decent foot, that.
It was a good putt, wasn't it?
You like them greens, don't you?
You were arsing around in the trees. And
taking a perfect picture of my round. Yeah.
Oliver knocks the putt in again, to half it, and then go down the next. They were all, I would never have went for it in real life if it was a tournament, but it was in a bit of a moody lie. But Aaron bet me a tenner if I get it in the hole. He'll from 250.
Out of a divot,
he'll give me a tenner.
So couldn't turn that down.
And then I said, if I put it in the water, I'll donate a tenner. So I was skulled on into the water.
Making out like you've done that on purpose.
No, I didn't do it on purpose, but it basically was because it wasn't an easy shot. But then you were left to just 2-putt for the half.
Yeah, they had about 40-foot for birdie.
And you 3-putted, so that was brilliant. And then the next hole, have it a bit long, chipped up, missed the putt. You have got like a
20-foot of a birdie.
20-foot of a birdie, and is it 8-foot?
Another 3-putt.
Another 3-putt. So they were one up going down the last, and we were like, oh my, what's going on here?
And then we both knocked it.
And then they, you could tell they were there. We both stiffed it in there, but yeah.
So and think about it, I had 3 birdie putts coming in, so it couldn't have been that bad.
Yeah, 8 putts. 9 putts.
Well,
8 putts.
Yeah, that is like,
but everyone puts in shots. You played the par 5. But then you could tell the nerves set in with them because they both had birdie putts and they both hit them. Like, it was like your putt on the last, they both hit them.
Yeah. I rubbed
10
off on them.
Foot, and then they both missed the next one. So, me and you had the chance to half the holes.
We did, we both had 8 footers for birdie.
The edge, so it was on
I
me.
The edge, yeah.
I was the heartbreaker.
John Spieth, didn't it?
It just wasn't to be. 90-degree lip out. So
exactly what Jordan done in the playoff.
Exactly, and it was a great. It was a great overall day, and like
just a bit of fun, wasn't it? For us, brilliant. You know, obviously the lads are into the podcast, aren't they? The kids, they love it. Every time we see them at the course, they're always buzzing to see us, aren't they?
Yeah, so, and I think like the not letting them win, but like me, us both missing. Made it so much better.
Never let them win, like.
So, but it made it so much better, didn't it? Yeah. Like that they were just jumping around, giving us the loser sign
the
on their head
on
and,
the
all
face
that.
And all that. When it all
oh, they were loving it when it was possible.
No,
that
it
was good.
Good cause as well.
Yeah,
so
oh, definitely.
Obviously,
yeah.
The reason that they were doing that is that the lads are really talented, both Oliver and Aaron. And because they've been doing so well in the golf, they've got places in the big junior championships, ones in Ireland and ones in Scotland. So just raising a bit of money to pay for the travel and the accommodation for those two events. So they needed £1,500 to cover the cost for those two events, and they got it. I think they got like £1,600 in total.
And that's without our tenors or whatever we owe them.
Yeah, that's
for the match.
I did promise we put some money in yet. Yeah. So we'll but yeah, so well done to the lads.
Boss.
Yeah, and a good luck for the season as well. Josh's lad Aaron's just won the first major at the Tommy Fleetwood Academy as well.
The Masters, yeah.
The Masters shot 200 gross.
Nice.
So you can see why when little Oliver and them are getting eagle birdie, you went, didn't he?
Exactly, yeah. Eagle birdie, yeah. Nothing we could do about that.
I think I probably could have done a little bit better, like, if I'm honest.
No, definitely.
Probably wouldn't have made any eagles, but...
No, but it is what it is. You were just trying to stay consistently losing the ball a hole. That was the aim, wasn't it?
Yeah. I just don't like golf balls, me,
no,
really.
No, that's it.
But obviously, before we went to there, there was the second appeal on Northern Order of Merit event.
There was.
At Delamere Forest Golf Club.
I was a non-starter in the morning.
Yeah, you're struggling, weren't you? Yeah. Wasn't too well.
Just had a bit of food, so and he just didn't agree with me. Honestly, it was bad news, you know. Very bad news, but...
Unbelievable.
You were
event
down
is,
flying the flag.
Yeah, it was a wet day, so, you know, that first hole, he put the tee right off the back. I don't know if anyone's played Delamere Forest Golf Club before, but off that back tee, it was a good... I think 4-9-5 par 4 to start.
Really, yeah.
It was a long one, yeah, and it's slightly uphill as well.
It's a. I remember you played last year sometime, and you were saying
I played
it was,
a few, yeah.
It was dead hilly.
Typical, yeah, it is. It's yeah, you're up and down all the time.
Yeah.
But Thomas Matthews won 10 under for 2 rounds of golf. He shot.
That's great, isn't he? He was the Welsh 2002 Welsh amateur, was he? The champion.
2022.
What did I say?
2002.
Yeah. 2022 Welsh amateur champion. So obviously, serious pedigree, like. 10 yeah. under, so what's that, 19 under then for the first two events of the...
Yeah, Jack Brooks won the first one, yeah, the place, 9 under and 10 under now for that one.
I think it must have something to do with the new sponsor.
It's got to.
It can't be anything else,
greatness
can it?
In motion, isn't it? That's
greatness
what it is.
Greatness in motion,
that's
that
exactly,
is
exactly what
it
is. Yeah, so two down, it's the Penwortham Rose Bowl next, so we'll be in attendance for that one. If you want to keep track of, obviously, the Order of Merit this year, just follow the appeal on clothing page. We have been posting regularly on the events and putting things in our story, so yeah, we'll keep the news coming on that. But in other news from a golf's perspective, have you got a
couple of things? So Jim Nantz has hit back at people saying that he was the Masters coverage shadow banned Phil Mickelson, like, as in, like, didn't show him.
Okay,
so he's hit back saying, like, he denies it and it's not true and this didn't happen. like, it's black and white, wasn't it? Like, he just wasn't on the coverage till he caught absolute fire. Like, for that front nine,
yeah,
you're seeing him floating past. You could see he was close to Jordan. He was beating him at one point. We spoke about this last week.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, I don't know. I think it's just...
He's going to defend his corner.
They might as well come out and just say it. It's pointless at this point, isn't it?
I know. I think what we spoke about last week was there was sort of a change, wasn't there, where, you know, Liv was more accepted and there wasn't as much scrutinizing of them. Although they weren't showing them.
Only the ones that... They only really showed the three that were in contention on the Sunday.
But they weren't...
And a few stellar
shots.
They
weren't having cheap shots, though, was there? You know, that's...
I know.
Maybe
there,
a couple,
no
a couple
more
of things that got said, but there wasn't, like... you know, you look back at events in the past where there's been real scrutinization of them. Like, they shouldn't be...
yeah.
They've made the decision to go there, go and play there, et cetera, et cetera. So...
I feel like the PGA Tour now is, like... settled on the, like, not settled on the fact of what's going, like, Liv's here to stay. So yeah. I think they've, now that they're meeting at the majors, to throw shade and keep going on about whatever they've been going on about, it's just boring, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
It's like, get over it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, most definitely.
Move on.
Yeah, I agree.
It's
here,
it's happening. It didn't fail. It's probably going to get bigger. Leave two women's. It's going to grow arms and legs.
Well,
and
this week's going to be a prime example because this is the first time that I know that they've had a full sold out crowd. They've got a party hole. You've got drivable par fours. It's a short course, so you'd expect to see some low scores, loads of birdies. So I'm quite excited for it, but we'll come on to that later. Other tour news I've got is obviously the PGA unveiled the new FedEx Cup fall schedule. So they said they weren't going to have a fall schedule. So what they've done is they've the original seven tournaments that are in play now, from September to November, they're going to now finalize the top 125. So, as you know, now next season we've got the designated events, which are going to be short and no cut. So, the top 50 players as of the 2023 FedEx Cup standings, they're going to go and be able to play in all of the designated events next year.
Yeah,
and then what they're doing is, all players 51 and below, so 51 up to like 200, whatever, who've got exemptions to play, they're going to carry the FedEx Cup points from 51st.
Yeah.
And they're going to play seven events. And then the top 10, the leading 10 players who have not previously been eligible, are then going to earn exemptions in the first two designated events after the Century Tournament of the Champions. And that'll give those 10 players the opportunity then to play the way into the rest of them.
Right.
So the seven tournaments are going to be, it's going to start at the fourth in a championship, which is going to be the 14th to the 17th of September. Then there's going to be a little break for the Ryder Cup. 2 weeks, then you've got the Sanderson Farms, the Shriners, the Zozo, the Worldwide Technology Championship, the Butterfield Bermuda Champs, and the RSM Classic.
So it's basically like more cemented on that there's two levels, there's two tiers.
Yeah.
Like, basically what everyone was worried about, it's even more nailed on. Like, they're going to get the big boys, or the separation of the top are going to get a break, and then if they do well, then you're allowed to play in the events. But if you don't do well, then if you do well, you get the fall off, innit?
So the way it's split now, you've got top 125, keep the card.
Yeah.
So that's not changing. The top 125 players will keep the card. The top 50 in the FedEx at the end of the regular season will then get a full, will keep the card, obviously, and then they'll get full entry into all of the designated events next season. So that's guaranteed. And then those who are finishing 51st to 70th, they will have the PGA Tour status guaranteed, but not the designated events. That's where the top 10 will, obviously, your points will carry on. So if you're 51st, you've got the better chance of getting that top 10 spot as long as you perform well in those seven events. But because there is seven events, anything can happen. So it also gives those players who are 140th, 150th, 170th an opportunity to get into the field because 50 players aren't playing, and then have a final chance in those seven events to keep the card.
Right.
So it'll be a lesser caliber of player playing in that, but obviously give them an opportunity. And I think, in the past, a lot of the higher ranked players have been a bit frustrated because when they start their season at the Century Tournament of Champions, or they maybe play one, they always feel like they're behind the behind the eight ball because...
Well, they are, aren't they? Because they haven't played.
Exactly. So even Fitzpatrick said today he's moved up to 22nd in the FedEx, and he said, you know, I had a slow start to the season because I didn't play in the full season, but now I've got myself in that top 30, which is where I want to be for the FedEx. So
yeah, but he only didn't play because he had an injury, innit?
Because he hasn't been injured for the full season. He's still behind the eight ball, Fitzpatrick. And he, but it's the same with the likes of Rory and everybody else around. If they don't play in the current schedule and if they don't play in that full season, then they fall behind.
Yeah.
Whereas all the players from the Corn Ferry who get the exemptions, they all play, get as many points as they can while the big fields aren't there. And then it's a catch-up game then, isn't it? And what we're going to see now is that full season's going to be about who retains the card, who gets in that 1-2-5, and those top 10, who gets in the designated events for the following season.
So then, obviously, the end of next season, if they're going to play a calendar year to 2024, then are they going to have the same thing again at the end of next season?
Well, it'll be a little bit different next season, won't it? Because you'll have the designated events this year. So it's going to be more of a tier, like you've said and we've said, it's more of a tiered system now, isn't it? So it's going to be a lot more difficult because of how the world rank and points sit and how the FedEx points sit. And, you know, you're going to get more points for playing those designated events, aren't you? So it's just going to be difficult to break into that. So it's going to be, they're still going to have
so this fall season, really, for a lot of players, could be career changing, really. Yeah. If they're going to get in them events, and then that'll get them into the next events, and that'll get into the events next year if they can stay around about the top 50. Otherwise, it could just be year on year on year cemented. This is your field, and you play one every now and again.
This is it.
If you get in.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. So if you're one of those 10 players who finish, I don't know, say, use Tommy Fleetwood as an example, because the last couple of seasons he's been outside the top 50, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Or in and around that. Tommy's the type of player that you want to see in the designated events.
No, of course. Yeah.
So he's a quality player and he adds value to the field. So if Tommy's sitting like 65th come the end of the season, then he's got a chance then to play those seven events to get himself in the first two designated events and then carry on playing. If Tommy doesn't do that and decides not to play them or whatever, then next season he's not going to be playing any designated events unless he gets an invite or unless he has a really strong start to the season and works his way into those events. So you've got the idea is to get the best players playing, but there is going to be fringe ones. If you have a bad season this season and you're a top player, then the chances are you're not going to get into that top spot.
Or like a Zalatoris, you have an injury or like something happens and you tumble down the rankings. It's life-changing, isn't it?
Yeah, because they're opening up to a field of 70 players, isn't it? So you can name probably 30 of the players that you'd want to see in that event as a guarantee.
Yeah.
You know, the top players. And if you're seeing them 30 there week in, week out, you'd be happy, wouldn't you? It's going to be top quality golf. But there's probably 4 or 5 players who are probably better than the top 50, but they just had a bit of a poor season and they're going to be out.
Yeah. Well, it'll all obviously either work itself out or they'll have to change it. But then if it does become too tierish, like, and it's a bit the same, it's just like another live, really, isn't it? If you've got 48 players or 50 players who are going to be playing the same events at no cost. It's mad, isn't it? Golf, when you think about it.
The golf landscape's changing completely, because what you're also going to get next year is those 10 spots become a lot more important then, don't they?
So yeah.
Top 50 in the FedEx, you know, and then you've got them.
And what happens to the DP spots as well when they come over? Where do they slot into things?
Well, they slot into getting a tour card the same way that Corn Ferry tour player would.
So they need to try and get into the fall events, to try and get into the bigger designated events, to try and get into the next ones?
No, they would start the new season as a full card for the full regular events. So you're going to have designated events and you're going to have full field events. So what you're going to have is...
So they won't start till 2024, January?
Yeah, because the season doesn't finish until till November.
Yeah, I see. Oh, yeah.
In DP World Tour. So the DP World Tour season...
I'm thinking it finishes at the Ryder Cup. Noggin there.
It finishes in November. So
the top
10 will get their cards and then they'll just try and get in as many events as they can. But then you've got to look at it. Like, if people from these designated events want to play the regular tour events as well and they don't just want to play designated events, then what chance have they got of getting in the field?
Yeah, exactly.
Having this fall season the way it is now, you're pretty much guaranteed the first 7-8 events, weren't you? These fall events,
yeah,
to give yourself the chance to work your way up and earn your car. But if that's not happening no more, then it's going to be a lot more difficult for them.
Yeah, they'll have to. We'll see, won't we? Anyway,
well, Thomas Dietrich is a prime example, isn't he? You know, this season, Thomas Dietrich has got his PJ Tour card playing really well. And I think, is he top 15 on the FedEx at the moment?
Mm.
So that's an example of what can be done if you take advantage of the fall season. With that not being there, if Thomas Dietrich started in January 1, what would his playing opportunities be like? And because he's not playing in as many events, sorry, would he be performing as good because of that inconsistency?
Yeah, because you stop start sort of thing.
Well, yeah, just not knowing whether you're going to play.
Mm.
So, because there's no guaranteed start, really. It's based on rankings. So if you're not part of that rankings, will you be able to play? I don't know. They've obviously worked it out, the PGA Tour, so we'll see what comes. But any more golf news?
Just that Rory McIlroy, obviously he's been very silent over what's happened to him in the, well, why he pulled out of the second designated event. That's two he's missed.
Yeah.
And I think that Monaghan said the thing, like, you're only allowed to miss one.
Yeah,
and then
the
Rory
century,
come out saying,
he?
Like, but the PGA Tour needs all its best players at the in the designated event. This has got to happen. And then he hasn't played. He's missed two of them.
Missed two of the first six.
And like,
as well.
But with no excuse. So I think then he's going to be getting some sort of PIP money removal. I think it could cost him around about £3 million, it was saying.
Yeah.
Or $3 million, sorry, £2.4 million, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, $3 million you'll lose from his PIP.
It's dangerous. It's like a lot of money, isn't it? Like, obviously not to him, but it's still like... Why isn't he coming out saying, like, this is why I'm not playing, or this is what happened, or...
Well, that's the strange thing, isn't it? And this is my bogey on the birdie bogey bust anyway. So the thing with Rory is he's constantly being the voice of the PGA Tour when it's suited him. And then obviously now that he's wanting to withdraw, you think he'd come out and at least explain, if it is for personal reasons or whatever, or there's an emergency, just explain what's going on. Do you know, if...
Just so people know why
you're not playing in the event after you've come out and you've called out that everybody should be here, everybody should be playing this event, and then you just don't turn up, but then you stay silent.
Do you know what Rory needs? Rory needs someone on like a little typewriter and says, like, do you remember saying that? And then he goes, oh, yeah, right, okay, well, I won't come out and say something directly opposite to that then next week because that'll make me look stupid. That's what he's done with the Liv thing, isn't he? I think Liv's great for golf. Categorically said he hated it a few months
dead
before.
Dead in the water, wasn't it?
Like, yeah. When you start contradicting yourself that much,
yeah,
and people start losing faith and belief in you, then you realise that, like, you're getting fed what to say because it's not your real opinion.
Yeah.
Because if you were a real opinion, it'd stay the same. You can't be changing your mind that much on things.
You know what? Maybe you're right. Or maybe he just wears his heart on his sleeve. Maybe he just says what he passionately feels at the time, and opinions do change, don't they? So maybe at the time he did think, this is a load of shite, this is dead in the water, I don't agree with it. And then he's seen what it's done for the tours and then thought, do you know what? Actually, on reflection, it's actually all right.
Well, yeah, well, maybe if you want to do that, then hold your hand up and say, apologise for saying I hate it.
Yeah, he's never going to do that, is he?
Well, you've got to, haven't you? Otherwise, your credibility is like... What does Rory McIlroy think of Liv? And then you're like, you've got these two conflicting things a couple of months apart. Like, what does Rory McIlroy think of the designated events?
And you use social media to your advantage as well. You don't have to come and physically speak.
No,
things.
Just post it.
Just post it. Tiger Woods does that all the time. Yeah. Like, you know, Tiger Woods is not physically typing that.
Get he's someone to do it.
He's
yeah.
Working it. But all you need to do is just do an announcement. The whole of golf media will reshare that and everybody will know that news quicker than it would be you actually saying it.
Mate, me and you are borderline getting someone to do our post for us. And that's a Rory, like, he is not in control of his own account. Like, just get it on with it.
No, I know, but, you know, that's all it needs. It just needs a little post.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry.
Apologies, I can't have played this week. I really want to, but this has happened.
And this is why, yeah.
This is the reason why I'm not playing.
The problem is, it's probably like he literally just doesn't want to show his face after Augusta, innit? And he can't really say that. Sorry, lads, I'm proper embarrassed by me playing Augusta there.
He's the type of player who come out and win, though.
I know.
This is the frustrating
it's stupid
thing, but yeah.
And then he goes getting like $3 million, so he's basically cost himself $6 million there by not playing this event. Annie.
Crazy times. Well, we've done me bogey. Shall we move on to the actual birdie and the bus then?
Yeah, that time again. Even though we've already had a bit of that time, so we've just more of that time now.
More time again. It's more time again, y'all.
It's more time again, y'all.
It's that time again, y'all. The birdie bogey bust. The birdie bogey bust. Birdie bogey bust.
So, Birdie, you go.
Mine is the excitement of this party hall at the sold out live this week.
Do you reckon it's sold out, as in sold or give away out like the way Centurion was?
Don't know. Don't know. Could be a bit of both. But, you know, there has been a lot of, I don't know, like Greg Norman will say this and Cam Smith will probably say this to boost the event, but the Australians are really up for it and looking forward to this event.
Mate,
so,
listen, mate, if there's somewhere with the ale, Aussies just go to it, mate. They don't care. They love a good bevy.
That's it. And how good is the waste management event with that party all at 16?
Yeah.
You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
No.
Yeah, it's a great concept. It's a par three. We've
like, seen odds on someone getting naked there, like, and honestly, it is, like, the mental.
So, you know, you've got all the players coming through there, the party. Well, I just think, I'm just really looking forward to see if the anticipation lives up to events or that hole lives up to the anticipation. So, Birdie this week is looking forward to that hole and looking forward to seeing what Liv looks like with a packed out crowd, because we've not seen it yet, have we? We've seen it with when it's been in America, there's been good crowds there, but it's not been waste management crowds, major championship crowds, has it? So,
but that waste management, though, it's a completely different animal, isn't it? It's like,
oh, yeah.
But then if Liv do it right, I don't know, like maybe what I was saying about at the one in Denmark, saying like free beer or like, you know, like just.
Well, this is it. Like,
a few like inflatables or something.
Yeah, this is why it's me, Birdie, because.
They need to spice it up to get it. Yeah. It needs to one up. It can't be the same as the waste management. It needs to one up.
You think of how the Liv players played at the Masters.
Yeah.
Showed that they can still compete. Rubbish that you only play 54 holes. You only play exhibition.
Oh, exhibition, yeah.
You only play an exhibition golf. You're not playing proper tournament golf. Yeah. They turned up. Brooks has nearly won it. And obviously Reed and Mickelson and a few others have played well and done what they've done. So it's obvious that the Liv players are playing well. It just needs that atmosphere.
It's, you know what it is as well? I know it's got the CW now and it's like it's on YouTube, blah, blah, blah. But like a bit of mainstream, if that was on Sky or like it's ESPN or something, like where you could just get it on your telly dead easy.
That'll come.
It will come, but I mean, that's going to help it, isn't it?
When the heat dies down on obviously all the controversy, media pressure and the controversy, I think eventually Liv will become an accepted tour and we will start to see a lot more collaboration between the tours. Maybe not the PGA Tour and Liv because that seems quite stringent, but I think...
Well, it's like what we always talk about, isn't it? One of them two needs to go before any sort of sit-downs are available.
There's a clash at the head of the table, isn't there?
That's it, yeah. Ego qualms.
What's your birdie?
My birdie, do you know what? John Rahm come out and I don't feel like it was a dig at Rory, but he was basically saying the reasons why he didn't pull out the RBC Heritage, even though he'd just come off a fresh win at Augusta there. Because he was like, it's a designated event, and people who are turning up to that event, the fans, want to see the Masters champion. They want to come out and see me. So I'm gonna play.
Fair play.
After his round, when he's watching the final groups come in, he was in the commentary booth, like sitting there commentating on the last like five holes or back nine or whatever it was, and it's just he doesn't really have to do that.
No, giving like, the time back to the game. Yeah,
it's great, and they're just after John Rahm,
such a raw win as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, John Rahm is my bird. He's just what a guy.
He's like that, isn't he? As well, because he always goes back to Spain and plays the national tournament. Doesn't
he? Of course,
and, you know, he is like he does do things for the fans, and you know what he's like on the golf course. Wears his heart on his sleeve. Yeah. Yeah, no, fair birdie. I've done my bogey, so you might as well crack on.
My bogey was exactly the same, just not Rory not commenting on why he missed the event.
Yeah.
And obviously saying the best players should be there, and then it kind of cost him like $3 million in his pip earnings, and it's just...
I think it sort of toned down the actual
need to
pip.
Happen.
I think Tiger Woods won the pip with only playing one competitive tournament. It sort of like downgrades the importance of the pip. The pip at one stage, well, this big
like
thing.
It, what they need really is a pip-o-meter at the side of like the PGA Tour website to let everyone know what's happening and who's moving it and what's going on. Like they have like trends on Twitter, don't they? Like Gareth Bale's trending or like whatever.
Yeah,
I just said Bale because I've seen it before. And imagine you had a little pip-o-meter there with like you know, like each the players like a totem pole, like the live, like coffee and live again, but like the live F1 thing, and someone at the top, and you know who's winning, and you can get behind like the person who's second or third. It's like,
makes sense.
I've always thought this about like X Factor and other like talent shows where like people phone in to vote, but you don't actually know the severity of how many you vote, what it does.
Until they announce it,
you're like, was your miles behind? Was it close? Could one more phone call have sorted that? Like, I just,
so you know, to pick the phone up next time.
Yeah, you just don't know, do you? It's like
interesting comparison. Yeah. That X Factor in the PGA Tour, like.
Sick little 5 minutes that one. But you get me, where you're like voting and there's a public interest in the outcome.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's that. You're on it.
Bush then. So I want to put this out for a debate between us, really. It's slow play. And what can we do about it?
Well, just before then, we get onto that. My bust is Cantley's response to his slow play accusations at Augusta was, we waited on the second tee, we waited on the 15th, and we waited in the 18th fairway. Yeah, all right. What about the rest of the day, like?
The two behind, you were waiting on every shot.
Every shot. 97 minutes spent on the tee box. Over an hour and a half, in case you don't know.
Just what do you do about it, though? Like, what are the solutions?
What do you do about it, right? You start putting one-shot penalties onto, once you go over your time, tick-tock, 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 bang, one-shot penalty.
Needs to be more enforceable.
Have that. And then, what does that cost? Millions. Then you'll soon see them quicken up. Can't they? If he got billed for every shot there, he'd have lost £1 million this week. He was 8 minutes over that chip.
I think that is the solution. They need to enforce it more. I think if they enforce it more, then, you know, maybe when they're on the range and they're practicing on how to speed the pre-shot routine up. When they're on the putting green, how do I, you know, Phil Mickelson once said, didn't he, about the green books when they got banned. They're saying it's to speed up play, but ultimately, if you've got a green book, you're studying that book when you know where your ball's landed on the green. On your way to the green, you're looking at that green book.
Yeah.
It's like a 5-minute walk, 4-minute walk, whatever it is to your ball from when you put it in. You're doing your study there, and then you've got that information so that when you get on the green, you've got half an idea and you just need to validate that what that book says and what your mind is thinking is actually what you're doing. It's so much less time.
Yeah.
So it's little things like that. You know, do we need to bring the green books back? Well, is that going to help?
Do you know what? Like,
I know Augusta never allowed them anyway, but so it wouldn't matter there. But I just mean in general terms, do we bring them back?
You see Spieth, Fitzpatrick there, when we come onto the RBC in the playoff, he's writing his notes down, which should take a long time, really, shouldn't it? He writes everything down, what he does, and he's there, and he's ready to play. Like, he's learned, he's got it in his mind, he knows where he is.
If, and that's the point, isn't it?
He hit 9-9, he hit wedge from 149 yards, he was 179 yards back, he's hit 9-9 the second time that they played 18 on the thing, and it's in his mind, he's on it, he's got... Prior, he doesn't have to stand there, check everything, know what's going on. He's already got it in his brain.
And that's the point. He's learned that off the course. He's learned how to learn how to play.
Yeah.
And do things a lot more quicker.
And he's just set up a couple of things and look, and he goes. There was a video circulating at Cantley, and I stared at the background to make sure that it was, like, I followed this fella to make sure he wasn't going back to the position where he was. And Cantley was on there for a good 2 minutes or something, like a minute and a half. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous.
The microscope's on Cantley at the minute, but it's not just him.
No, of course, it isn't just Cantley, and everyone else is slow, but he's painfully slow.
Yeah.
And
with Cantley, you can see how slow he is, can't you?
Yeah, he's slow over everything. He's slow walking, he's slow over the ball, he's slow in his pre-shot routine, he's slow when he gets over the ball, he's slow on the greens, he's just... It's painful.
And it kills the game as well. Because if you're watching that from an entertainment value perspective, you just want to see them, like, have a look. Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Knock it next to the pin. Knock it on the green. Bomb one down the fairway. You know what I mean? Your pre-shot routine doesn't have to be long. Just has to be precise. And you have to know what you're doing. So I think, they need to enforce it more. They need to start giving penalties out.
Well, it, like I've said this a million times, every time the slow play debate comes on, we were keeping up, open qualifying, keeping up with the group in front, and the ref came out and put us on the clock.
Yeah.
Like, when do they get, why isn't Cantley on the clock?
Well, this is it.
And this is it. It's not even a single person. It's the group.
Yeah.
Like, if Koepka and Cantley got paired together at the Open or at the PGA or US Open, like, I think Koepka will just walk off.
Well, Hovland did.
Yeah.
Hovland did a number of times in that final round. He just walked off. Was yeah, playing then, the shot while he was walking down the 13th.
And then if you, what happens if you're playing out of turn and all that? Is that just etiquette? Or there's no penalty for that, is there?
No, there's no penalty for playing out of turn. It's just an etiquette thing, yeah.
Yeah, so like...
The Camille Johnson thing, that group got put on the clock. So while he was finishing out and he missed the three-footer, forgot his score, but the other two walked to the tee and teed off just to speed up play.
It's like the bigger your name, the more you're allowed to get away with.
Oh, yeah.
In the game. And it's not like...
That's just politics of every sport, though, isn't it?
It is, but then, like, it
you
needs...
You look at football, you know, some teams will get better decisions than other teams.
Yeah.
Like, we never get a VAR decision, us.
Ever, though. But then, it like, someone needs to come along and just start tanning the big fellas. Like, can't, like, fans need to be handed out, or penalties, shot penalties or something.
Yeah, I think there needs to be... It's getting to a point now where... If it doesn't get controlled, it could start impacting people
but
wanting to watch.
There is
the
sport. There is a set rule.
But there's like four, though.
No, but there is a thing, isn't it? Like, I think the first person gets like 40 seconds or something, and the second person gets like 30, and the third person gets 20.
Yeah.
So that's to do your whole pre-shot routine and hit the ball.
Is that enforced? And if it is enforced, how many chances do you get before you actually get the penalty? Because I think it's a lot.
Yeah, but no, yeah.
You know, and then is that fit for purpose? So no, is maybe, 40 seconds enough? Should it be less?
Maybe it should be a little bit more. And then, but then if you go over it, then you're slapped. Do you get me?
50 seconds.
Give you 50 seconds or a minute.
Give you a minute, but if you go over 1 minute at any point...
Any point, you're gone, yeah.
Well, penalty, one-shot penalty.
Yeah.
Because fines to the top players is not going to do anything.
No, one-shot penalty, yeah.
And then, it, you know, if it comes to the end of the tournament and that one shot is the difference between winning the tournament, then...
It could be massive, but if you know you've got a minute, they hit probably 1,000 balls a week. They could get that routine down.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It comes off... You need to take it off the course and, you know, be a bit more precise about your practice and make sure that you're doing everything. One of the agendas on your practice day is speed up.
Yeah, hurry up.
Yeah, hurry up, yeah.
Yeah, so that's like, that's the only rules I can think of is the shot clock. Like, I read an article then, it was talking about baseball. Baseball introduced the pitching shot clock to say, get it and throw it, and it's sped up the games. It's revolutionized the sport a little bit. So,
there's definitely ways to do it, especially with the technology now.
Exactly. The telly can do it. Have a timer in the corner, and then everyone knows who the culprits are then.
Well, the DP World Tour, when it was the European Tour, done one in Cyprus, didn't he? Where they done
the shot clock, yeah, remember that?
Shot clock game, yeah. Did Robert McIntyre win that one?
Yeah.
I think he did, didn't he? Yeah. So, you know, maybe trial Cantley on one of them rounds and see how he gets on, see how he plays.
Mate, but he will be struggling.
Yeah. But you know what? Onto the RBC Heritage, though, he did only just miss out by one. For all of his slow play, duffing it into a tree, chipping off a sleeper.
Yeah.
He's only missed out by once. The problem is if what he's doing is working for him to the point that...
Yeah, but is it working for him or is it doing it? Is it killing the people around him? It killed Hovland. Like, I know Spieth and Fitzpatrick put on Brooks as well. But Brooks, like, I don't know, you could blame the slow play, but it didn't really affect Rahm, did it? So it's like actually playing with Cantley.
Ah, okay.
Like where Hovland was actually playing with him, just blew up. Like Spieth and Fitzpatrick are playing with him.
Yeah.
And you could see Spieth, he was just practicing and he is chipping. I think it took Cantley 7 or 8 minutes to hit that shot. I know it was a difficult one off a sleeper, but...
Yeah, them ones, you know, they should take a little bit longer, but even 7-8 minutes is a joke.
No, it's a joke.
But that's the thing, though. He takes that long and he actually gets it up and down. Doesn't help the debate to help him speed up.
Because it's not about what works for him, though, is it? It's about what works for the rules and for everybody.
But that's what I'm saying. But while they're not enforcing them, he knows he can get away with it. So he's like, this is working for me in my game. If they're not going to slap penalties, he's probably thinking they should be slapping penalties on me. But while they're not, I'm going to carry on because guess what? I'm playing well.
Yeah.
So
just like give an inch, take a mile sort of thing.
Exactly that, yeah. So he is playing very good and this week he's back to defend his title with Xander, isn't he? So
yeah,
will it be interesting to see whether Xander speeds him up or whatever?
I don't think Xander's notoriously the fastest either, is he? But
where'd he get on so well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wanted to notice this week Fitzpatrick was chipping with a normal right hand low.
Yeah.
Which is, and then he's obviously went and got the job done in America.
Went and won it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just, you know, he's very statistical, isn't he? You know, like you said before, he writes everything down.
Yeah.
Everything is to the point. So yeah, there will have been probably a pathway for him, knowing the way he is, to get him back to right hand down.
What do you reckon there, though? Jordan Spieth, 66-66 on the weekend, and then two putts that burn it. Defending champion, Bocholong back-to-back, and doesn't get the job done. Does that, like, help him? Or, I mean, does that do him in a bit? Or is he just happy with it?
I don't know, because you've got to think it's come off the back of a very disappointing final round of the Masters, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So you think if anything was going to destroy him, it would be the final round of the Masters when he's got a chance to get another green jacket. Obviously, it was very well publicised 2 years ago how bad he was playing. We were talking about him losing his PGA Tour card at one point.
That's giving him a kick up the arse, didn't it?
It certainly did. But now you look at him, you know, every week he's contending. It seems like he was contending at the Masters last week, shooting 66-66 and missing a few putts. It's not going to impact him, I don't think.
No,
I think he's going to take the positives from it. He's not playing at Zurich this week, so he'll be back maybe at Mexico. Maybe he takes a couple of weeks off, I'm not sure. But no, I think he'll be back stronger, Spieth. I think he's a potential major champion this year, mate.
Well, Jim, there's another thing where I was going to come on to about, like,
what
best.
What do you think, help or hinder?
See, I think he probably thought that he had one arm in the jacket, to be honest, and then he's ended up losing it.
It's a great story, though, wasn't it? Because it was either he wins and defends, or Fitzpatrick wins, and like he said in his post-interview, this is outside of a major. This is the one that he wanted the most. Because
yeah, because his family have got, like, a timeshare there and all that, haven't they? And, like,
he always used to go there as kids.
Yeah, so he said it's, like, it's the one that he wanted more than anything, and it was, yeah, there was fairy tales either way, stories, like, yeah. He was glad Cantlay didn't win. But, like, Fitzpatrick there, like, since slagging Bryson off, this is another, like, U-turn.
Yeah,
slagging Bryson off and then gaining, like, 4 mile an hour club head speed, like, getting 25 yards. So when he's saying, like, anyone can do it, I wonder if he meant, like, that's what I'm going to do. Like, yeah, it's mental, isn't it?
He probably thought after he said that and it got publicized, he went, actually, if anyone can do, why don't I just have a go?
Yeah, and then, but he hasn't. And, like, that's the difference between, like, 9 irons and 7 irons, isn't it? 25 yards, and it's 4 mile an hour. He's
25 yards is the how precise they are with the anything from an 8 iron below is just, yeah, it's game changing, and it's proven that he's won a major, got his first PGA Tour title over the line because he was. I wouldn't say struggling, but, you know, he was never really competing on the PGA Tour at the final rounds, was he? And now he seems like he can turn up any week and win.
Yeah, well, do you know what I was looking at Fitzpatrick's wins, and I think he's won the Nordic Masters, the British Masters twice, the Andalusia Masters, and something. I think he's won like 4 or 5 Masters. And then he's got this jet, like the jacket off that RBC Heritage. So, like, it's all building up.
The
like, I think that it's written in the stars for Matt Fitzpatrick to win the Masters next year.
Yeah,
and you can have that in writing.
I'm not gonna deny it. He's the 8th best player in the world at the moment. So,
but he's not come from nowhere. But his consistency and, like, he's obviously had a bit of a bad start to the season with his neck injury and, like, a few miscuts and what have you. But
yeah.
Since the Masters, and then he's winning there. Like, now it's you probably, like, I've never picked him, and I don't think of me picks. I've never put a bet on him in my life, and, like, now I'm thinking, like, he could kick on here and win a few.
Well, it was the PGA as well. He had one hand on the PGA on the Wanamaker, didn't he? And kept putting it in the water on the final round, and obviously JT come from nowhere and ended up winning it. But I think that was the first sign of, you know what, he can compete at the top level.
Like, he's probably is he the highest ranked British player?
Yeah, by a mile, yeah.
No, yeah.
Tittle Hatton's, like, in the 30s now.
Really?
20 odd, yeah.
My God. Was the time I even looked at that world rankings?
Fact check that, like, the it could be 15th or something, but pretty sure the English aren't doing too well when it comes to the world rankings.
Yeah, that was it. So the British Masters, the Omega European Masters, the Omega European Masters again, and the Andalusia Masters and the Nordic Masters. So he's won five Masters.
Yeah.
That's when I was checking out his thing, and I'm like it's... I just wanted to get that right there.
And the other ones have been the Rolex events, haven't he? Is it the Abu Dhabi?
He's won the Dubai World Championship twice, yeah.
Yeah, Dubai, yeah.
So that's all his wins, and then the US Open. So he's won a fair few...
Well, it was seven wins in total, wasn't it, on the DP World Tour? Similar record to Tommy, where you get a handful of wins on the DP World Tour, but just go over to America and just can't get it over the line. Tommy was another one. He was 11 under going into the final round, three back. And then he just couldn't get it going in that final round. Again.
He just doesn't seem to have that final round in him, does he?
No.
18 to all that is.
Close enough.
Well, that's what I would. That was my next question. Was the most like active now players, current majors like UK or like English? You know what I mean? Who's going to be finished with the most?
So out of all the British players, who's going to finish with the most major championships?
Yeah, it's like Rose has got two, has he? Obviously, Danny Willett's got one.
I don't think Danny Willett will get another one.
No. So like Faldo's, I think Faldo's got six, has he?
Oh, okay, so not currently. You just want to
Just thinking like, I am speaking currently at the minute, but then I'm just thinking what is the record? It's six, isn't it, Faldo?
There's obviously Rory. You know, are we counting Rory in this? Because if anybody, Rory's going to be the man, isn't he?
Yes. Oh, well, I'm just more thinking, like, is Fitzpatrick going to go on a run?
I mean, Fitzpatrick, the way he's playing now and the way he's trending and knowing what we know about how precise his practice is, and when somebody is that dedicated to the game, it's difficult to see them dip in form, really, isn't it, as long as they stay fit. So I think a fit Fitzpatrick can win multiple major championships, yeah.
It's
whether he'll win,
another
one this year, don't know. But I think over the next 3 or 4 years, if he keeps playing the way he's playing, he can definitely get another one or two. Can he go on to win like 4, 5, 6? I would say no. There's just too much of a depth of talent
in America.
Yeah,
obviously in Europe as well.
Yeah, I'd say so. Just for him to win that,
I think Tommy will get like a US Open. Me, you know, it's dead difficult.
Fitzpatrick never won in America before he won a major, so yeah, maybe Tommy could win one. I just
like some, even like most of the top British players, like even Montgomery or Westwood and that, like they just never got to that next level, did they? But Fitzpatrick seems to be like he's already there, isn't he?
Well, this is what, with Fitzpatrick, I can see Fitzpatrick winning maybe one, maybe another two. Don't get me wrong, I'd love to see Tommy win multiple major championships and multiple, and I'd love all the European players to do it.
Yeah.
But
don't see it.
No, I think even Rory. When was the last time Rory won a major for all of his talent?
2014 PGA.
I don't know what it is about the major championships, but
just like
British players, we just can't seem to get them over the line. But hopefully, Fitzpatrick and
well, there was a thing, wasn't it? Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson that both won majors in the time before Rory and Spieth have.
Yeah,
like it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, PGA and the Masters.
I just thought I'd ask a couple of little curveball questions for you there to see what you were chatting about.
I think I answered them, all right.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Do you know what? It's hard to like agree or disagree, really. And it's like, it's just a matter of opinion, isn't it? And like, it's hard for me to say, Tommy's definitely going to win one. Because
I don't think you can say anyone's definitely going to win one. But I think from a trend perspective, like, let's use Tyrrell Hatton as an example. Tyrrell Hatton's got a 2-shot lead in the major with 9 holes to go. Do you think he can see it through?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he's in that position and he's won before. And
he's won the Arnold Palmer in America, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's won in America and he's won similar amount to Tommy and Fitzpatrick in maybe more actually on the DP World.
Again, it depends where in the field he is, who's chasing him, what's going on. Like, is he playing with the leaders?
Let's do a few scenarios then. Fitzpatrick is one behind John Rahm and Max Homa with 6 holes to play in a major. Does he win?
Nah. No. I don't think he's got that fire to catch them.
Okay. Tommy Fleetwood has got a 3-shot lead and he's being chased by Will Zalatoris. I'm trying to think of players who haven't won majors. And Tyrrell Hatton, does he win?
See, wouldn't put my money on it, you know.
No.
Just because he just doesn't get the, he hasn't got the job done. Like, I know he won at the, in what was it, the Nedbank?
John Rahm is four shots behind Tyrrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood with nine holes to go in a major. Who wins?
So you'd fancy Rahm, wouldn't you? You'd have, you've got to.
To catch that, to put the pressure on them, and then they...
Yeah, two-time major winner. Like, he's...
World number one.
World number one. He's fiery. He's puts, like... he's just got that X factor, hasn't he?
Right, nine holes to go. Back nine on a major. Tommy Fleetwood is one ahead of Tyrrell Hatton, and Tyrrell Hatton's one ahead of Fitzpatrick, who wins out the three of them. So Tommy's,
I reckon
it'd
be a three-way playoff, you know? I honestly do. I hope that happens, but it just what else is a mad one with like majors and like even on the PGA Tour, it's always one English person that is doing all right. It's never like, you never see England like 1, 2, 3, do you?
No.
It's like, I know it's obviously more Americanly dominated, but you just never see it.
Yeah.
Or even just, Europe 1, 2, 3.
It goes back through to the college system, though, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the American system is set up perfectly for you to have a pathway straight to the top of the PGA Tour if you have got that. Obviously, you need that natural ability as well as having the dedication and the purpose in your practice. But if you start in America at a decent level and go through that college system and then get onto the Korn Ferry PGA Tour, it's proven time and time again that all the best players in the world come through that system. It's very rare they don't.
In other news, talking about the RBC... the fantasy league can get to fuck.
Like, Kevin is struggling.
Oh my word, what is happening?
I think you stick with the program, it'll eventually work for you. Stick with what you're doing. It's just, you know, you can use stats all you want, but you can't account for poor performances. If a player doesn't perform, they don't perform. Like Aaron Rye, after round one, I was on 400 points.
Wow.
I had the leader in pot three winning in Rahm. And obviously at Aaron, what did I say?
Rahm.
Aaron Rahm. Is he any good? I pick him next week.
Yeah.
Aaron Rye, sorry. Yeah. So he was leading in pot three, which is 300 points. And at the time, the others were cuts made, which accumulated another 100. And then I finish on 55 points.
Mate, at no point was it I have more than 8 points, I don't think. I finished on 5 points, pot one, minus... No, 10 points, pot one, minus five, miscut.
Yeah, 5 points you've done for the week. You've got some catching up to do. James won this week, and he had a really good Masters as well. So he is...
And do you know what?
Leading
the pack. Only just started listening to the podcast and only just took up golf. I think it's because I called him a mole last week and infiltrated the camp that he's...
He
started Googling, like, it's getting all stats betting help and all that.
That's it.
He's but now it's a great game.
It's doing right.
It just shows you how...
What's good about the game is that...
It can be caught quickly, can't it?
Week one, Josh picked John Rahm to win. He won and he had the most points. Week two, Nuggies picked Fitzy to win. And Fitzy's won and he's got the highest points. So it shows
there was only one person who had a pot four. Made cut, just to reiterate the importance of pot fours making the cut, which is Keaton this week, Kramer Hickok, and he comes second.
70 points, yeah.
So,
and then the rest, if you go down the field, Hayden Buckley was in pot three, finished tied fifth, and got 120 points for that. And that's where the people who were finishing like fourth and fifth, that's where they got their points boosted up together.
Yeah, so you only nearly need one of your pots to do four, right? I think my whole team combined was... like 12 over or something. Matt Fitzpatrick was 12 under on the front nine for the week.
There you go.
So I was miles off the pace. So
should have picked Fitzy.
Yeah, but that's
the thing with these designated events, because the field is so stacked, anyone can win a card. You know what I mean? If Spieth would have won, Keenan would have been the highest point scorer.
Yeah.
Because you would have took 30 points off Nuggy and give them 30 points to Kieran because the difference in first and second in pot one, so either won by 5 points.
And then just before we conclude the RBC, hats off to that shot into by Fitzpatrick into the last judge.
If you're going to win,
judged it perfectly because the last two times he played it, it bounced on.
Yeah.
And it went like that 9-9 in regulation, or it was the first playoff hole. When he played 18 twice?
Yeah, twice, yeah.
So, when he lumped it to the back of the green and then had to put, knocked it a good 5 foot past and then knocked it in to go down to the,
to get it back
to the thing, yeah, or whatever, the par three, or can't remember the odds that they'd done it. But then to hit, to recalibrate the shot, land it short and roll it up and nearly hole it to 5 inches.
Great way to win.
Like, unbelievable. Spieth didn't really put a foot wrong in the playoff and end up losing to him. Moments of brilliance.
But that's what you want to see. You want to see the best players in the world battling it out in those situations.
Definitely.
And you know it's not going to be a par's going to win because the other one's bogey, that you're going to have to knock it close.
Well, it's better, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It is better.
But look, no fantasy golf league this week because we have got the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, which is the pairs event. So it's a week off until next week's Mexico. So there's no picks this week, but we will do some form of picking on the three events that we've got to review. First, we've got the ISPS Handa, the first ever event in Japan on the DP World Tour this week.
Yeah, it becomes the 51st country to host a DP World Tour event in the world. That's a new, obviously a new country on the roster in Japan.
Well, definitely. And the DP World Tour said, didn't he, when they first took over, this is going to be a global tour. And already this season, they visited four continents in 9 different countries now. So there's a lot of travelling for the lads. You need to be playing well to cover your costs, I think.
Exactly. Like although it is great for the world and to be around, it is a hassle on the players. Like, you know, for the fact, like, if you can just drive down the road to your next tour event, how much better is it than having to fly halfway across the world?
And you can see, because Rasmus Højgaard said one of the exciting things about the DP World Tour is getting the opportunity to play all over the world. And I can't wait to play in Japan for the first time. So, for players like that who financially are secure, top-class players, being on this tour is probably an unbelievable experience, isn't it? Going week to week with your friends and your family, if they take them with them, to visit all different parts of the world. It's unbelievable, isn't it? But you think for those players who are missing cuts and they're getting in events and they're struggling, you know, what's that doing to the bank balance?
Obviously, it's killing them off in that sort of sense, but then it's like we had Chris Hansen on the podcast and he said when you're flying and you're playing well, like them hotel rooms and room service, and it's the best thing in the world. He said when you're not and you're in airports and you're delayed, and it's like it's the worst job in the world because you can't wait to either get out of there or you can't wait. You're just hating your life.
You spend the next day there if you're doing well.
Exactly, yeah. So you're flying home a couple of days early and all that. It's the highs and lows of professional golf, isn't it, really?
It is. I mean, obviously, this is a co-sanctioned event. They tried to do this last year, didn't they? Or the year before. It was last year, yeah, but it just ended up being a Japan Golf Tour event in the end. But it's co-sanctioned with the JGTO. So there was a partnership announced recently between the DP World Tour, PGA Tour, and the Japan Golf Tour organization. So it sees the top three players in the JGTO Order of Merit, they earn membership onto the DP World Tour each season. So it does provide a clear pathway now for players in Japan and on that tour and in Asia in general who want to play on that tour to get through to the top tour and the PGA Tour. Now, so if you're a Japanese player playing on that tour, you finish the top three, you get your DP World Tour card, you finish top 10, you're on the PGA Tour.
So it's like a little runway straight through.
You know, because we've seen recently from the Asian Tour, Tom Kim, haven't we? He had an unbelievable season on the Asian Tour, was winning, and now he's like 15th, 16th in the world, is he? You know, won on the PGA Tour already. So you want to see the best players in Asia. Eventually getting to the top of the sport, don't you? So this is a good event really to see because there's 43 Japanese players in the field this week.
It's a good chance for them to get, obviously the telly's not going to be the best with the time difference, but it's a good chance for them to test themselves against, you know, some of the top players in Europe, isn't it really? Or on the DP World, sorry.
Definitely, yeah. No, definitely.
And it's not a long course, is it? 7,039 yards?
No, it is a par 70 and there's only 2 par 5s.
Yeah.
So that's probably going to play its part, isn't it? But yeah, you're right. I think 7,000.
Over like 7.75 is like more of a... Like it's not even 4 miles longer than that.
Yeah.
So I think SNA is as well off the black. So
yeah,
with them boys, especially if it's a, I don't know what the weather's probably coming into. Oh no.
Well, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday's okay. Friday's looking wet. There's going to be rain and chance of thunderstorms.
Right.
So if it's wet, par 70 at 7,000 yards, it will play long.
Yeah.
But it should be interesting. Brandon Lawler, he gets his second DP World Tour start this week as well.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and Ernie Els is back in the field. And after a long break, Rich Mansell and Conor are back on the DP World Tour.
Yeah, I'm fresh off his win. Matthew Baldwin's teaming up in Japan as well, so
yeah,
it'd be good. Who'd you fancy?
I'm going to go Rasmus Højgaard.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think, if I'm honest.
Do you think he's got a bit of a bit between his teeth because Nikolai's playing on at the Zurich with Torbjørn Olsen?
No reason other than, you know, I don't know this course. I've got no statistics to go off. I just think if you look at the fields, the caliber of player that are playing, and how long it's been since Rasmus has actually won one, he's had a bit of a break off the tour recently, and I think he's probably motivated to get one over the line. So, who do you think?
I think Jordan Smith, for no other reason apart from when I was in Portugal playing down the Victoria, thinking, how did he shoot 30 under around here? And he stuck in my mind, and I just think that he's going to get the job done this week.
He's had a boss season.
Yeah.
He's been playing very well. Yeah, he's a good shout, definitely.
So I feel like with us having a bit of a break and then like the DP World Tour having a bit of a break, I forgot all about the DP World Tour.
Yeah.
Like the fancy strange golf league. Like, I know like Pele's put a few nails in it, but I feel like we are as well. Like, by like, you know what I mean? Like, all concentrating the fancy in America and you're like really studying the PGA Tour, you're studying the stats.
Yeah.
Like, I know like the top 10 driving distance, I know like what's happening and who's up to what. Whereas, like, look at the DP World Tour, I didn't even half know the field.
Well, ultimately, like, we support the DP World Tour because what we've always known, and we're European, it is losing and it's going to lose its best players over the next few years. So it's going to be interesting to see what the future holds for the DP World Tour.
1,000,000%.
On to the party over in Adelaide then.
Yeah.
So the standings after the first three events mean that from a team perspective, the four aces sit on top with 64 points. They've accumulated two runner-up finishes and a third place finish heading into Adelaide. Torque moved into second after winning last time out there on 50 points, just 14 points behind the leaders. And then Fireballs are holding the last podium place on 38 points. They're slightly ahead of Stinger and the Crushers.
Right. What's surprised me most about this live, and I was looking at a bit, because it's hard to find the like stuff on live. It's very like hidden in it. Like the either it's something slagging them or something negative news or someone with comments. But Jedi and Morgan is out there calling for more events. So he's saying like there's not enough, there's too much time between events for him, and he wants to start playing more. But then like he come 46th, 37th, and then 23rd. So he's not exactly doors down, is
well,
he?
He's the one. So obviously the bottom four at the end of the season,
yeah,
could potentially lose the spot, couldn't he? And at the moment, there's eight players who are yet to record any individual points in the standings. You've got Phil Mickelson, Kim, Ogletree, Chase Koepka, James Pyott, Ben Wiesberger, Lahiri, and Jeddah Morgan.
Yeah.
So they haven't recorded any single individual points. So whoever finishes bottom four at the end of the season, as I say, they could.
What happens if it's like that? Eight go down?
They might just have to do it based on where they've, like, positions, where they've finished, whoever's been the worst four performing, yeah?
It's heavy, isn't it?
Well, they might just say 80 is lucky and I'm getting no points. See you later, boys. But they've got the Live International Series, haven't they, where hundreds of professionals can enter for 10 events around the world.
Oh, yeah, and then you
get the opportunity to get that promotion into.
See, that's another boss-like thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you could roll the dice, enter a few of them. You can actually, I think you can Monday qualify into them as well, can't you? And we were talking about Monday qualifying in and then getting on to live after like a few starts. It'd just be.
But that's it. I don't think there's any criteria of who can go and play these events. It'll just get balloted out probably based on world rankings.
Yeah.
But any pro can go and apply for these events. So, you know, any one of the lads that we know can go and play all 10 events and then be on live next year.
Mental.
And then you've got the draft as well, so players will move from team to team, so you're potentially getting four players who will get relegated, four new players that will come in, and then a draft. So next year, the teams are going to change again. So,
do you know what they should do, right? And I've just been taught this now. Imagine like I'm a team captain, yeah? And then there's like three players, like team talk, yeah? But then you'd have six members of team talk, or eight members, whatever you want.
Sub in and sub out.
And then have a game before it, and then the captain makes his selections for the team based on how they finished in the little warm-up events.
Okay.
So you bond your team together, everyone gets to know each other, you're playing, and then you go out and you pick your best squad, and then you go and play.
Just messes up the individual then, doesn't it?
No, I know it does, but then if you want to be playing the individual, then you need to be playing better than getting your spot.
And who dictates this? The captain picks the teams?
Or just where you finish, what you're shooting, do they in the qualifying?
Yeah. I like the concept. I just think if you'd have an unbelievable day and shoot 64, you may be getting in ahead of a better player.
Well, yeah, well, you're better than them, aren't you, on the day? So you're in, aren't you?
Ruthless. I like it.
Or even have a player for the one, maybe have a one reserve for the last spot and then take them out.
Yeah.
Like, do we relegate them? I don't know. I just feel like it was bossing me at that. But you get me?
I get the concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's make them in the spot the day before the
event. Because, then what it does as well, it makes them the teams the team. They can't go and play for like a different team and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, that does mean nothing there.
What, where they can come
where
in?
Where they can draft and like pick different players and all that. Like,
only at the end of the season, that though, isn't it?
Yeah, but the way, I suppose, well, because like, Swafford's gone out now, can he come back? He won't come back, is it? Because he was talk, wasn't he? And now he's...
Well, that was only last season.
It was just a little preliminary one, yeah.
Because of there was more players getting signed. But now that they've got the final 48, those teams, so this season, the 12 teams are four, they will never change.
Yeah.
The only way they'll change if somebody gets injured and a replacement has to come in.
Yeah.
So Hudson Swafford's still.
But then when they brought Bubba in as like he was like a non-playing captain, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like that element of having him on the mic as well was like another like team like F1 where you've got like the Wolf in the background.
Like having a general manager for the teams, I think, yeah. Like a non-playing captain. So like say I don't know.
So I think a non-playing captain and a sub, you start to get more behind like what your team doing, who's winning, who's playing,
yeah,
what's the captain saying. I don't know, it's like it makes it a team, doesn't it, more than just four players.
Yes, yeah, so you got the team captain, so then you'd need like sort of a GM, wouldn't you, somebody who's like, I know we would never do this, but say Zach Johnson, for example, was the general manager of the Four Aces.
Yeah,
so he was the manager of those that would determine who goes out where, who the teams are together.
Yeah, I think there's another gear that Liv could drop there, I think, with that team element.
When it gets to the playoffs, especially,
because
then you're picking who's going out with who, aren't you? So, but individually, the leader this season is Charles Howell III. He's on 56 points. He's closely followed by Peter Uihlein, who's been the most consistent player this season, but without a win, he's second. And then Carlos Ortiz, who's still without a win this year, but he's finished ninth, second and ninth. And he holds that third and final podium spot.
Nice.
Yeah. So I mentioned before on my birdie, because we were looking forward to it, obviously, it's the Grange Golf Club. This one's a par 72, and it's only 6,946 yards, this one.
Well, you can see what they're doing. They want a birdie. They want a slogfest, don't they? They want it like driving greens. That's what the Aussies want to see. Like,
Eagle puts that you can chase. So there's four par fives that are all reachable in two. The fourth hole and the eighth hole are both drivable par fours, and you got the 12th hole, which is a party hole. So, you know, it's a shotgun start, so you can't really go first to whatever. But you are going to have a lot of birdies out there, you would expect, especially given how well the lads are playing.
Million percent.
Off the back of the Masters. So,
who do you think is going to take it down?
Individually, I think Cam Smith has to win in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
He's got to win. Nah. He hasn't been playing the best all season, to be honest. He didn't play well at the Masters, really, for his standard. I think he'll be working really hard in his game and want to put on a show in Australia.
See, I think Brooks is going to come with another point to prove me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is. He's after dropping the ball. Favorite, hasn't he? It's got to be favourite. That will either make it or break it, that, won't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know how much he thinks about the major championships and how much he wants to win.
Exactly, yeah. So,
but yeah, what about teams? What teams think's going to win?
Crushers.
Do you?
Yeah. I think Bryson will pop up there as well. He's been struggling.
Because of the distance?
I think with the distance, yeah. I think he'll overpower that course. Obviously, you've got Bryson and the Crushers, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think Crushers will do well.
Yeah, Smash is...
Koepka,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Fireball's me.
Yeah.
I think Carlos Ortiz, Garcia, Chikara. And is the other one Abe Anser? I think it is.
I think someone was talking about this. Like, you're not just remembering like 12 footy teams. Like, you've got to remember like five different tours, all the different players, all the different teams. It's like.
Yeah, it is. It's Garcia, Abe Anser, Eugenio Chikara, and Carlos Ortiz.
Yeah.
It's a very strong team, that.
It is.
I think they're going to win it this week.
Right. So you're going Cam Smith individ, and then I'm going Bryson's team to win it, but Brooks to take it down individually.
Yeah. On the subject of teams, then, it's fitting to go straight into the Zurich Classic of New Orleans.
Yeah, so for anyone that doesn't know about it, it's alternating round, four-ball and foursomes format. So the first and third rounds are four-ball, and the second and fourth rounds are foursomes.
Alternate
shot. And then they're in... Which is foursomes, which is alternate shot, obviously, which is... And then they're in teams of two, aren't they?
Yeah.
One little bad bit of news coming out of this is I seen Kevin Kisner was meant to play with... I think he was a Corn Ferry player or maybe even a bit lower. I was on, like, a sponsor's invite sort of thing. And, like, the fella posted it all around social media. And I think he's Corn Ferry, this guy. Can't remember his name. Posted it all on social media, buzzing, playing with Kevin Kisner, amazing, buzzing. And then he posted saying, like, just before I went out for my final round there, Kevin Kisner texted me saying he can't make it. I'm like, I'm devastated and all that. Like, so he's, I don't know, like, what
the nightmare, that. The exact reason. Step in.
No, I don't think so, no.
Shame, innit?
I know. So
because that's what I was going to talk about, the opportunity this gives for some of them players. Because if you win here, a win at this event is, it awards FedEx Cup points, official money, as we know. And it counts as an official victory for the members of the winning team. So both players receive a 2 years winning exemption and the eligibility to play into invitational fields, including the Century Tournament of Champions and the Players' Championship. And additionally, the PGA of America include both members of the winning team in the tournament winners category for the PGA Champs.
It's a lot, isn't it? It's a lot of stake, really. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, if you look at like how well Matthew Fitzpatrick's playing, if they can put it together, it gives Alex probably the fastest track to PGA Tour stardom that you've ever seen.
Honestly, though,
there's a massive opportunity for players like that. And, you know, even if you look at the, like, there's three of all English teams. The other one is Matt Wallace and Shinquin.
Yeah.
So imagine opportunities for them. And then I know these are PGA Tour regulars anyway, but Callum Tarn and Ben Taylor as well.
Yeah.
So, although this is a, I wouldn't say a nothing tournament. It's a bit of a different tournament, isn't it?
A bit of fun. Isn't it? Like team musics and walkouts and all that. It's like, yeah.
But the awards are, you know.
Yeah, you're getting as much as doing it as if you went and done it on your own, but you've got a team member with you. It's like it's.
Well, Alex Fitzpatrick wins this. He gets what I've just explained there. He gets a cut of the winner's purse, but then he also gets the $500K as part of the guaranteed earnings program of the PGA Tour for rookies next season.
It's crazy, isn't it?
So. There's a lot at stake for players like that. But yeah, there's some good teams that they're going to have to beat to get there, aren't there?
No, none as good as John Daly and David Duval.
What a team. How good would it be to see in them? Oh, mate.
Who do you think? Who are you fancying?
Well, looking at the teams there, obviously Xander and Cantley are very strong. Morikawa, he's teaming up with Max Homer. They're the second highest ranked team behind the defending champs. And Homer, if you look at his match play and partnership record in the President's Cup, he had a 100% record, didn't he, at the President's Cup? So then you've got the Korean team of Siwoo Kim and Tom Kim. Very strong. We mentioned before, there's some DP World Tour regulars in the team. Thomas Dietrich's teaming up with Victor Perez. I know Dietrich's been on the PGA Tour this year, but Victor Perez won a Rolex Series event earlier this season. Thorbjørn Allison, who's come back into playing some of the best form with Nikolai Højgaard. And then Sam Burns is teaming up with Billy Horschel.
That's the one who I've had my eye on, you know.
Well, this is the third year in a row that they're playing. They were runners-up last year and then tied fourth the year before.
Yeah, that's who I have my eye on, Burns and Horschel, for the win.
I'm going to go for Morikawa and Homer just off the back of Homer's record.
I can't believe you're going against your man.
Who?
Tom Kim.
I know.
Is Siwoo putting you off?
It didn't, no. Tom Kim's not been playing too well, has he?
No.
He's off my list at the minute. He's to book his ideas.
Off your buddy list?
Yeah.
No, but I think, I'd say, it's always a bit of fun this weekend. Like, I'm just glad that the Fancy League's having a little rest because it's been doing me cap in that.
Yeah, but you know, it's going to be the better ball rounds that you're going to need to take advantage of. Last year, Xander and Cantley shot 13 under and 12 under, and they were only 4 under in the foursomes rounds, which was the joint worst score in the foursomes out of the top 15 pairs last year.
No way. So, I've never played foursomes, you know.
Have you not?
Ever? Nah.
There's a summer foursomes at SNA. They do a match play knockout every year.
Yeah.
I haven't entered this year, but me and Lee have entered the last few years.
No, I need to play. I want to play it, you know.
Yeah.
Next time we go out, we'll do it.
Want to play foursomes?
Yeah.
lot of pressure, you know.
It's good though, isn't it?
It is good. It's a lot of pressure though.
Yeah.
I remember, I might have spoken about this in the podcast, but me and Lee were playing Frank and Dave at our place in the first round. Obviously, they play all the time. Frank and Dave, two top golfers as well. And I think they were like 3 or 4 up through like the first 4 or 5 holes. And like me and Lee were playing terribly. And we were like, oh, this is a fucking embarrassing this. And if they, obviously when they beat us, it would have been loads of banter. We beat them this score, that score. And we just started getting into a rhythm, playing well, got it back. And then I think we were all square or one down going on to 16. Lee's hit a boss drive down 16. I've knocked it over Gumbly's. And Lee's got like 105 left in. And I was like, oh, 105 good yards this. He went, this is my worst yard. Is this? It's not long enough for his hippo sandwich that he uses. So he had to use a pitching wedge. And he's just shanked it into the trees. Right. But then we found it. And then I've knocked this chip to about 8 foot. And he's canned it for a par.
No
and
way.
We've won the hole. We've won the hole, so and I think we got 4 shots, and we had a shot on that hole, so we won it. And then going down, we were all square going down 18, and Lee's again bulleted this drive. I've knocked it to about 12 foot, and Lee's canned it for a birdie, and we've won one up. And we were like,
oh my,
none of us could believe it in the group. And then what made it worse was
We
played the match after the closing date, so it didn't matter anyway. So, no, but foursomes is unreal. When you have moments like that, it's class. Like, because
I know when
Lee, because the match was so close, I know for a fact what Lee would have been feeling when he hit that shank.
No, yeah.
It's like, oh my God, what have I done?
Rather let everyone down.
And we end up winning that all off a shank.
Boss.
It was brilliant. Sick, but, yeah. Man. Always a fun one to watch, you say. Get the juices flowing for the Ryder Cup as well.
Oh, it does, yeah, definitely.
What we've got there, but
keep an eye on Alex for the Ryder Cup as if he pulls his finger out this week.
Yeah, you know. Imagine. Ryder Cup contender.
Imagine.
Alex and Matt Fitzpatrick, yeah. We'll have a couple of brothers there, couldn't we?
Yeah.
The Molinaris, the Højgaards and the Fitzpatricks.
Imagine it.
Brilliant. But hope you enjoy the golf. We'll be back next week to review it all and obviously look at the next instalment of the Fantasy Golf League. There's still time to sign up.
I will be back.
Kev will be back. There's still time to sign up if you're interested. We've got, it's £4 to play, as you know, and obviously cash prizes and voucher prizes this year, which, you know, we're going to be adding more prizes to the major championships this season as we go. They'll be announced close to the time. But for now, we hope you enjoy your golf and we'll see you all soon.
Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he out of sync.